Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Threshold. My name is Tony Vicenda, and this week I sit down with seminarian and bearded gospel man, Aaron Alford. Aaron recently wrote a book called Bearded Gospelman, The Epic Quest for Manliness and Godliness, along with Jared Brock. He also runs a large online platform that talks about the connection between hairiness and holiness. I was really excited to sit down with him and talk about what really matters. Here we go. Hi, Aaron. How's it going today?
Hi, not too bad. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm really excited to have you on the podcast today and just to kind of talk about what you believe, why you believe that, and what that looks like in your life. I'm also really excited about some of the work that you do and a book that you have coming out in the next couple of days. It'll be about a week and a half ago by the time this podcast airs, and I'm looking forward to chatting about that some at the end. But could you just tell people a little bit about who you are?
Who I am. My name is Aaron Alford, and I am a fresh seminarian here at the Pontifical College Josephinum in Columbus, Ohio. I am Canadian, so there's that. And I have been for most of my adult life until this fall. I've been a missionary with Youth with a Mission, which is an international multi-denominational Christian missionary organization, or ecumenical, I guess would be the better term. And I have been living and working in Modesto, California, working with the street community for most of that time. And in the last year or so, I've had some new direction brought into my life, and I am now entering seminary and studying for the priesthood for the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico.
Oh, awesome.
So a Canadian in California who's in Columbus studying for Gallup.
Awesome. I can't wait to hear about that journey for you. I do love to ask people just a few questions so that the listeners can get a chance to understand who they are a little bit and know a little bit more about them. Some of these may seem a little silly. Some of them may seem like big questions. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just, you know, whatever you think. And one of my favorite ones to actually start with that I haven't used here on the podcast, but my good friend Pete Burak introduced me to in an earlier episode. If you walked into an ice cream parlor that had every type of ice cream flavor imaginable, like if you can imagine it, it becomes an ice cream flavor and you can get it and you can get any two scoops. What two scoops of ice cream do you get?
That's an interesting question because the seminarians here, we are constantly going to an ice cream shop up the street. So I'm pretty locked into this new Buckeye flavor that they have here, which is chocolate and peanut butter and something else in there. So whatever I get, it's going to have to involve chocolate. And I like to ask the person serving me like what your favorite is and then give me that. So maybe I would do one scoop of something involving chocolate and then ask the proprietor of this amazing ice cream shop that has every flavor imaginable to give me their favorite.
No, that's great. Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, no right or wrong. Just and one of Pete's observations is it always tells you something about people. And so I really loved what you shared about kind of saying, here's something I love. And then here's, you know, I want to know what this person thinks is good. I want to try that. When I travel and I go to restaurants that I can't go to here in Seattle, I always say, hey, if I'm only going to ever eat here once, like what's the one thing on the menu I should make sure that I eat? You know, that's so I love that. So awesome. So let me ask you another question. What's something that you are afraid of?
Latin. That might be informed by the fact that I just came out of a Latin class here. And, you know, that is not my best subject, you know. memorization is a little bit difficult for this guy.
So it's not informed by any sort of demonic possession on your part. You're not having a bodily response to Latin.
Hopefully I'll be able to recite the needed Latin in such a situation. But Latin and spiders, or spiders that speak Latin, or that ask me to recite Latin verbatim. That might be a little frightening for me.
Well, man, I'm so glad to have you on, and I would love you to answer just kind of our crux question for the podcast, and that's, if somebody came up to you on the street and asked you in just a couple of minutes to explain what you believe or tell them what you believe, what would you say to that person?
I might have to recite the Apostles' Creed or something. I believe in God, the loving creator, who made the world to be good, that there was a great catastrophe on our part that has separated us from being able to be in true relationship with him. And Christ, as God himself, came to live and walk among us to show us the face of God and to bring us into right relationship with him. That might be something like what I would say.
Awesome. Now, if they asked you what religion you are, how would you answer that question?
I would say I'm Catholic.
Now, you had mentioned, you grew up in Canada, and then you are in seminary right now studying to become a Catholic priest, but that you're doing it for the Diocese of Gallup. I can't wait to hear that story, but did you grow up Catholic? So when you were building tree forts in the woods with your friends, were you a Catholic then, or did faith play a different role in your childhood?
No, I grew up in a Christian household, but not a Catholic one. I grew up mostly in rural Canadian Baptist or Baptist-like churches.
And, are Canadian Baptists different than American Baptists?
Perhaps not quite necessarily like a Southern Baptist, but it's like debating on a particular shade of blue. It's all blue.
And did you guys attend church regularly, or was it a Christmas and Easter thing? What did the practice of faith look like in your family growing up?
Well, it was we attended very regularly. Growing up Baptist, you have the Sunday morning service, which is, of course, where you have to wear your suit and tie and you sing hymns. And then you have the Sunday evening service that you go to, which is slightly more casual attire, and you might sing some gospel choruses. Somebody might even have a guitar, but that would be a bit, that might be a bit too edgy for some congregations. And then, of course, there was the Wednesday night Bible study that you were expected to attend too. So, going to church quite a bit. And it was not something that was sort of just divorced from any true connection. There was some real heart behind that. And I remember we would have family prayer time sometimes and things like that. So it was never something that was sort of just a thing that you did. That was divorced from anything going on in my actual life. Like, I knew God was present, and I remember pretty early on being, feeling this connection or a desire for a connection with this God that we talked a lot about.
Would you say you had ever had an experience of Jesus as a child?
That's a good question. I think I remember just sort of quietly, I was a very introspective kind of kid, or very quiet. And I remember just sort of having a sense of God in that quietness sometimes. And I remember just sort of sitting and pondering who God was or who Jesus was, and feeling that, people would often talk about asking Jesus into your heart and that kind of thing. And I remember just quietly praying that little prayer in my mind as a kid. With whatever understanding I had at that point. And just feeling that connection or desire to connect with this God, this Jesus that we talked about in church.
So you had this experience of a prayerful life at home as a child, of being able to have these moments of quiet introspection. Did that continue through high school into college? Where at what point did you go from quiet, reflective Baptist kid to this kind of journey into the Catholic Church?
Well, it all started when I first did a school with Youth with a Mission, YWAM for short. And there's a school that YWAM runs called a discipleship training school, which is basically kind of like a 5 or 6 month crash course in missionary work. And I did that school, and you're sort of thrown into community with a bunch of people you've never known before. And like I said, YWAM is an ecumenical organization. So suddenly this kid who was born and raised Baptist is living in close community with people from all kinds of other Christian traditions. And I think that was the first time that I was able to see wider than just the tradition that I grew up in as a Baptist kid, and sort of accept the fact that other Christians might have valid points of view about some things. And I think that's when I first started to sort of take what had been perhaps my family's faith or my parents' faith and kind of make it my own. And it was in this time of intense community and, sort of wrestling through, what it is I believed or why I believed it, and talking with these other people who had different ideas and different approaches from their Christian traditions. And that sort of is what sort of flung the doors open for me. And then, it was a few years later, several years later, when I actually became Catholic myself. So.
And what precipitated that change? So was there a person that you encountered? Was there, what caused you, beyond just kind of opening up your mind, what caused you to actually consider the Catholic Church as a denomination as you went through that seeking process?
It was a couple of things. In 2003, I moved from Canada, where I was living in Kitchener, Ontario, down to Modesto, California. And I was going to join a close friend of mine, Chris Whitler, who had just started a work with the street community there. And we kind of didn't know what we were doing. We were there as Youth with a Mission missionaries, supposed to, quote unquote, help the homeless in some way. And we didn't quite know what we were doing. We knew we just wanted to do something friendship-based, something simple, and something that was rooted in just simple ways of sharing God's love with people who were otherwise often overlooked or neglected. And so when I first arrived there, Chris had just found like anybody else in the city who was interested in doing something similar. So it was this kind of ragtag group of people that was sort of made up of some oddballs and misfits, myself being one of those oddballs and misfits, including this former Big Tent Revival preacher who had grown up as a gypsy and was a really, charismatic kind of Pentecostal guy. He and his wife and this elderly couple who just wanted to help and do something. And this Catholic guy named Greg, he's the one that sort of instigated this turn towards the Catholic Church formally. I had long had an appreciation for Catholic spirituality at this point. I read authors like Henry Nouwen, Thomas Merton, and enjoyed the Catholic approach to contemplation and that form of prayer. But when I got to know Greg, and he would talk about Mass like someone who's newly married and in love with his bride, and that was fascinating to me. That he loved it that much. And we had some really great conversations about theology and everything. And still, I would not have expected myself to actually become Catholic, as much as I was finding these talks interesting, and especially at the time as we're, you know, working with the homeless community and the street community, uncovering aspects of Catholic social teaching and stuff. But again, I would not have necessarily chosen to actually become Catholic, except that one day I was sitting down with my friend Chris, eating a burrito, which is just really good things happen when you do that. When you're eating a burrito in California, something good is going to happen. And I got a call from Greg, and he said, you know, I was praying for you, and I felt like I wanted to challenge you to seriously consider becoming part of the Catholic Church. And I said, okay, that seemed kind of random, but I took him up on it, and I began to pray about it. And it wasn't long before I was with Greg, and we went into a little Eucharistic Adoration Chapel at a little Catholic church, and I just remember feeling the presence of Christ there, the presence of God, and thinking, well, that's not bread. That's kind of what sealed the deal for me.
Now, thanks for sharing that. I really appreciate it. So you had this experience of kind of coming to see Christ in the Eucharist, this kind of moment of encounter there, and that was kind of created this draw for you into the church, and so you just immediately decided, I want to be a Catholic priest, right? Just right away, jumped straight into it?
Well, kind of, actually. This is the other complicated part of my story, is that backing up to that first school that I talked about with YWAM.
Yeah.
I was 19 years old at the time. This was in 94. And during that school, one of my leaders was praying for me. And he was praying and said, you know, I feel like I need to tell you that there's something significant about your name. Aaron was the high priest of Israel. He brought the people before God and God before the people. And I think there's something about that in there for you and in your vocation, in your calling. And, you know, at the time, not even dreaming of any Catholic stuff, I just thought that was cool. And I sort of held on to that over the years. And I often thought about it in terms of, you know, whatever ministry I was involved with, and especially going to Modesto and trying to bring Christ, bring God to the homeless community and stuff. Soon after that experience with the Eucharist, I went to a Mass. This was before I was even confirmed. And the readings that Sunday happened to be from Hebrews 5, which is, no one chooses this honor for himself. He is chosen for it by God, as Aaron was. And then I felt like a punch to the chest when I heard that line, like, and everything zoomed back from, you know, this word I'd gotten years ago that I kind of held on to, and God had sort of dropped in a few more places along the way, that, oh my gosh, this might be a more literal meaning than I've ever thought before. What if God's calling me to the priesthood as I'm being called into the Catholic Church? And so at the time, I would go to Mass, and then I would also go to the little non-denominational church that was supporting our ministry. I'd go there for Sunday morning service after that. And for some reason, Pastor Ken at this tiny little non-denom church that is by no means Catholic decided to also preach on Hebrews 5 and said, oh, would you mind reading that for us? Oh, it was like this double whammy on that Sunday, where suddenly this idea of priesthood came into my heart and mind. And so it was really kind of intrinsically tied into my journey into the Catholic Church in the first place. Long, long story, just a little bit shorter. Right around the time that I got confirmed into the Catholic Church, I felt very, very strongly, like I heard the voice of God in a way, you know, not audibly, but wouldn't have been more clear if he had spoken audibly, along with like a heavenly mariachi band appearing out of the sky. that I was at the very least called to be single, and that this priesthood thing probably lay somewhere in my future, but I was just not sure when. And so over the years, you know, I worked there in Modesto, working with the street community and also building this really beautiful little community that we had of ministry, and sort of just always held out this option before God, you know, when it's time, I hope and pray that I can say goodbye to all of this and follow where you lead. Mm. And then it was just a couple of years ago when that I finally felt like that push had happened, and this was the time, and this was the time to go for it.
So. I want to talk a little bit more about two of the things you mentioned, and one was something that's, I think, is considered probably one of the most countercultural things that we encounter in the Western world today, and really even across cultures, and that's, you just said you felt called to be single. Mm. What was it like to realize that call, and how do you encounter people responding to that typically?
Hearing the call to be single was something that God definitely laid groundwork for, so that when I was praying that day, that Saturday in my room, when I was wrestling with what God wanted me to do and what he might be calling me to, when I felt God speak that word to me, I was ready for it. And when I heard it, it felt like perfect freedom. It felt amazing. It didn't feel like a negative at all. And like I said, I was not 100% sure that that necessarily meant priesthood, although I felt that that was a, you know, definitely a strong possibility that I hoped I could respond to when the time came. But and from that moment on, I was able to just embrace that as a vocation. And it was a beautiful thing. And but at the same time, it was something that God really had to work on me to prepare me for that. And like I said, if he had told me at an earlier time, I probably would have reeled against that. I wouldn't have liked it too much. But from the process that he took me through, it felt like a perfect fit. And I knew that this was something God was calling me to. And by his grace, his will and my will actually lined up on this. So
thanks for that. Thanks for sharing that. That's a beautiful articulation of that. I loved you using the word freedom. I think that's such a huge thing. People kind of think there's going to be this sense of loss or resignation to that, or that it's something that, oh, I think I might want to be a priest and then I decide to be single. So hearing that process from you was, I think, just a great thing for people to be able to kind of hear your story in that. The other thing you named, I kind of think, is held in contrast with that, but also complementarity, as a lot of things in faith journeys are, and that's, you named this community that had been formed. And what was it about that community that you felt like was unique or gave it strength?
It was the depth of friendship within this community. Myself and Chris Whitler, who were there at the start, were joined about a year after I got there by my friends Jim and Kelly Sustar. And we had known each other for a few years previous. And then as we entered into this work together, and this work of really wanting to give our hearts to people and having to be willing to get our hearts broken if we're going to do friendship-based ministry, just the level of friendship that we had with one another was very deep. And as we discerned together what we were called to, the words that we found were creative, compassionate community. So creative in how we do ministry, creative in how we are a community, and creative in how we show compassion to not just to the people we're supposed to be ministering to, but also to one another.
I think there's a huge lack of authentic community in today's world. And I think a lot of what we encounter in any significant conversation or relationship is this desire to look into another person's eyes and to a certain degree to find ourselves there, right? To be able to recognize our own humanity in that place,
yeah.
But also to be able to enter into a relationship with that person that is just grounded in an acceptance of who I am, but it is a desire for me to become the person that I'm meant to be at the same time. And I think that's such a challenge, and it's so rare. So I'm really glad you were able to have that experience, because I don't think it's always the case for people in today's world that that's something they experience. So I want to shift a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about your prayer life today? So you're in formation as a seminarian. My co-host, Father Colin Parrish, he's just fresh out of seminary. And so we talked a little bit about his obligations as a priest, but I think a lot of people don't know what a seminarian does. And that may vary from diocese to diocese a little bit, our local kind of Catholic organization system. But what is your prayer life look like?
My prayer life here at seminary is on one hand structured, but it's also up to me to make sure that these structured times of prayer have life in them. Get up every morning and have morning prayer from the Liturgy of the Hours at 6:45, followed by daily mass, and we come together again for evening prayer. There are times for holy hours with Eucharistic adoration each day as an option, and also just to remember to do the things that are perhaps unique to my own prayer life and my own way of connecting with God. You know, I know that personally I need to spend time with a Moleskine journal and a pen for my relationship with God to stay alive.
No, that's great. Let's talk about the most important thing we could possibly talk about. Let's talk about beards. the journey to this podcast, I began years ago. I had stumbled across this blog called Bearded Gospel Men. I don't know if you're familiar with it or if you've heard of it.
I have.
but could you tell us a little bit about what you know about Bearded Gospel Men or your role in it?
Sure. So Bearded Gospel Men was originally a Tumblr site started by a Reformed pastor, Joe Thorne, back in, I think, 2012. And it consisted mostly of Christian memes about beards. and especially at the time, from a particularly Reformed perspective as well. And so I had started growing my beard out in 2010, that summer, when I just sort of looked in the mirror and was like, I'll shave tomorrow. And then, you know, several tomorrows later, I suddenly have this big beard. And a friend of mine posted something from this Bearded Gospel Men site on my Facebook page that I thought was really funny. And so I started following them, and I followed their Facebook page and their blog. And like I said, it was mostly just joke memes about beards, usually from a Christian perspective. It was ridiculous. And so when Joe Thorne and then his guy that had taken up when he so when Joe Thorne retired from managing that blog, and then the guy who replaced him decided to retire as well, I volunteered and said, I'm a churchy guy. I'm a beardy guy. I think I'm pretty funny. I could do this. So I volunteered to take it over. And Joe Thorne gave me the keys to the beardy kingdom, so to speak. And so I just started posting, you know, what they had posted before, funny pictures and, you know, funny sayings or whatever. But I also thought this could be a cool little opportunity to maybe go a little deeper if people were interested. And so I started to post some just real simple, like, little biographies of great bearded gospel men or just really simple, usually with a strong sense of humor, a little devotional article or something like that. They actually started getting like positive responses from this, and, you know, emails from guys saying they appreciated something that I wrote or whatever. And this was, you know, so it was sort of had all the jokey stuff still there. And then just an opportunity to maybe talk about some bigger things about the Christian life, the gospel life, what true masculinity and manliness is in that context. And so this little jokey website about Christian beards never really let go of me. And I would let the site rest for a while because, you know, I'm just one guy and I can't come up with how many beard jokes can I make? But it just always came back. I'd get a message from somebody or whatever, or maybe I just get a stupid idea that I wanted to post. And I actually started like making friends from this thing. I got to be friends through this website I lost my train of thought. I actually started making friends through this thing. I was introduced to people through the website who later on became like real life, flesh and blood and beard friends of mine. And it was, again, through this website that I was introduced to this other author named Jared Brock. And he had the idea, said, hey, wouldn't it be great to have a Bearded Gospel Men book, you know, to take some of these things that you've been doing on the website and make that like a devotional book? And so we came up with this idea of having a book with a bunch of biographies of great bearded gospel men from history, along with some devotionals, and of course, a whole lot of humor. And here we are about to release this Bearded Gospel Men book.
Well, and I was really honored when I saw my picture on the front of the book. It was really a huge, a huge win for me. And I'm sure most white bearded guys are going to feel that way.
Right. I was under a picture of me. So my friend said, I don't know. What's
it? Everybody's just looking for their $5 from you for that book. So this book, like we said, it's actually coming out in the next couple of days. It is just a collection of different bearded gospelmen. Are there 31 of them?
There are 31, yes. Yeah.
One for every day of the month, and then you can start over on the next month. And it's coming out. Where can people find this book?
They can find it on Amazon.com and just about any online retailer, and it's going to be in bookstores as well. So anywhere that
you... And we'll drop a link down in the show notes also too, so that people can just click through to that. But it's this wide release book, so it's not like you self-published this or you're like, I'm so smart about beards that I'm gonna just put all this out there. There's actually this community of bearded Christian men who were like, this is the book we've been waiting
for. My beard landed me a book deal.
No, it is. So most of the listeners know that we run Catholic Balm Co. here out of my house. Actually, I sit in the midst of St. Nicholas Blend, which is our new seasonal aroma getting ready to go out. And so it's really interesting to have somebody who I can actually empathize with on the, well, let's see how far this religious beard joke thing can take us in what we do, and seeing kind of the joy in that, but also the way that you're able to actually impact people for the kingdom in this really unique way. So I can't wait to get a copy of the book and to sit down with it. I'm going to be on the road a lot over the next little bit, but I'm looking forward to being able to spend some time with it and to be able to dive into it a little bit more deeply. I also just love, it's not like you're Catholic, but it's not just like Catholic saints throughout history who have beards. That's pretty easy, actually. It's an ecumenical collection of folks, right?
It really is. And that's really, as I've thought about it, that's really kind of a reflection of my life so far in the Catholic Church. Like, I was sent from a non-Catholic church in Canada to go be a missionary in Modesto to work with the homeless community, working alongside a tiny little non-denominational church. My closest friends are not Catholic themselves, but I would not be here in seminary pursuing the Catholic priesthood without those friends. And so my experience of the Christian life has been a very ecumenical one. And I think that there's just so much we can learn from each other. And it's nice to not be all kind of holed up in our own little zones, you know? There's so much more we can see and grow in when we're together.
Well, and one of the most common spiritual quotes that is beard related, right, is Augustine's commentary on the goodness of unity between brothers. And so it's actually, to me, a really kind of beautiful thing to see that he compares it to like oil running down your hair and into your beard, this unity that we can have between brothers. And so in a real, very real way, down Aaron's beard, and it's a very real way that you, you are experiencing that and living that out through this book, through the work that you've done, and through your own spiritual journey. So I think that's just tremendous. And I, like I said, I can't wait to sit down with a book. I would love to hear maybe from you, though. Is there one of the stories in the book that is your favorite? Is there maybe one that surprised you or that you were really excited to be able to share that's a kind of a standout?
That's a good question. One that comes to mind is one that I sort of discovered accidentally when I was sort of going down a rabbit hole of research. And I discovered a Russian Orthodox saint named Saint Luca of Crimea, who was a 20th century Orthodox priest who was living in communist Russia at the time, who was a brilliant eye surgeon and a priest at the same time, who was just a total, bad A when it came to his faith and, not backing down from the persecution of the communist regime and speaking out for justice, and then, being carted off to Siberia and facing torture and imprisonment, and just always being true to his faith and being true to the people that he felt that he was pastoring. And it's just his story is kind of amazing. A Orthodox priest who is also a brilliant surgeon, specializing in eye surgery. Like, he literally healed the blind for several years, ended up at the end of his life becoming blind himself and dying a few years later. And when his funeral happened, the government tried to keep it, on the down low, because he was this big public figure for the Orthodox Church and a thorn in the government's side for so long. But thousands of people came out, and his funeral procession stretched for miles. And it's just a remarkable story that I never would have heard of had it not been, for beards.
So what do you think is the greatest spiritual benefit of growing a beard?
Oh, boy, there's so many. patience. It's a great metaphor for the patience required for Christian growth, to grow a big, fantastic beard. It just takes a lot of patience and time. And don't scrape away what little you might gain each day, but each day accumulates, and eventually there's something amazing there.
Well, Aaron, if people want to follow more about the work that you guys are doing, what is the best place for them to check that out?
Everything related to the book is on beardedgospelmen.com. You can find us on Facebook, which is our main outlet for posting and everything, but which is facebook.com/beardedgospelmen. And I would also encourage anyone who's curious about my previous work with Youth with a Mission just to look up ywammodesto.org, which is ywammodesto.org, and have a look at that little creative, compassionate community that is still going on, even as I'm here in Columbus, Ohio. So.
No, and we'll drop links to all of those things down in the show notes also, but you can use any search platform, but you should probably use Google to find any of those things that you'd like to look up too. But also at the end, I like to offer people just kind of two things. One is there a question you have for me? Is there a question you'd like to ask me? I'd be happy to share something. I take away a lot from these conversations and want to make sure I provide the opportunity to give back to other people. And then after that, I'd love to say, if you're open to it, I'd love to pray with you.
That would be great. Okay. We'll go with a beardy question. How has having a beard changed your life in any unexpected way?
I mean, well, I would say when I started growing a beard, and it was been pretty much part of my identity since I was in high school. We weren't supposed to have beards, but I usually had a few days worth of growth, and it grew back out pretty quickly. So I had about as bearded as you could get in my high school. So it was kind of just always my identity as a speaker, as a trainer. When I traveled, I was one of those bearded Catholic guys who came out and did stuff. I would have never assumed that we would be able to do the kind of ministry work that we do through Catholic Bomb Co. We're doing this thing called the Nazarite Challenge. We're in the middle of it. And, it's something, lots of things we do, we kind of do as an afterthought of like, hey, we want to do this, spiritual challenge. And then at the last minute, we were like, let's make a Facebook group for it, just where guys can share. And I remember opening up that Facebook group last year and thinking, we'll have maybe 200 guys by the end of this in here. It'll be a good place to kind of continue to engage them. And within like 12 hours, we were already at like 700 or 800 guys. And the level of vulnerability and honesty in that group on Facebook is just overwhelming. And so as we go into that process this year, just kind of seeing guys really be vulnerable with each other, name the places in their journey that they need to grow, and just kind of offer themselves up to God in a new way. I don't know that I've experienced that anywhere else in the church. I know it exists, but like, I can't get guys at my parish to share that openly, and I'm in a regular relationship with them. It's one of those things that I would name really the guys in that group who I get to watch journey throughout the year, but specifically in the month of November in their relationship with Christ. That's been massively life-changing, not to mention the way that it actually helps support like all the missionary work that we do as an organization. It's just a really amazing things. So, I mean, really kind of in a very similar vein, like the way that beard culture has interacted with my faith, it has then allowed other people to step into a deeper experience of Christ. I would have never, never guessed that.
Yeah, me either. I had no idea when I just sort of said meh in the summer of 2010, what growing a beard would lead to.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. So yeah, I would love to pray with you. And I don't know if you want to pray with me, like if you would like to go back and forth, or if you just want me to say a prayer for you. Would you have a preference?
We can go back and forth, sure.
All right, I'll start it out. And then if you want to finish it out, that'd be great. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. God, I just thank you for this time to sit down with Aaron, to get to know him, to hear his heart, and also to have somebody who has had a journey that's similar to mine, as much as it's taken them to a different place within their faith journey. I just thank you for the beauty of the freedom that you've given Aaron, the solace and the consolation that you have given him in his current vocation, God. And though none of us know where you're calling us, I just thank you for the way that he is pursuing you. We just ask that for the work he's doing through Bearded Gospel Men, even though people might take it lightly, that it would actually take deep root in people's lives and be a place where they can encounter joy and transformation. And we just also ask, as you call him forward, that he would continue to seek to serve and to do your will with that kind of creative compassion and zeal that he brought to that community in Modesto that's transformed his own life. And we just ask you to bless him.
God, I thank you for Tony and everything that he's doing, and just for the amazingly unique person that you have created him to be, and just the joy that I see in what he does and how he does it that shines forth. And I pray that likewise, he would just see these amazing, unexpected connections happen with people, that people would be able to experience the freedom of living in community with you, as they see what it's like to live in community with each other, and to be able to be vulnerable with one another and so be vulnerable with you, and let your love pour into those broken places in their lives and transform them. And again, thank you for who he is, and thank you for the ministry that you've given in crazy, unexpected ways, and even seemingly silly ways, with beards of all things. But God, it's real, and it's amazing to see what you can do. I just pray your blessings upon it in Jesus' name.
Amen.
Is there a connection between hairiness and holiness? Absolutely. From John the Baptist to St. Francis to Charles Spurgeon, godly men have been growing beards since the beginning of time. In Bearded Gospel Men, authors Jared Brock and Aaron Alford bring you a book that may change your life. and make it a whole lot hairier. Visit beardedgospelmen.com to discover the hairy path of holiness as you learn about a new bearded hero of the faith each day for 31 days. That's beardedgospelmen.com.
Hey guys, Tony Vicenda here. Before we hop into my conversation with my good buddy, Father Colin Parrish, I just wanted to take a minute to invite you to go like us on Facebook at facebook.com/thethresholdpodcast if you haven't. I also want you to go and check out the most recent post we put up with this interview from Aaron Alford. The reason I want you to check that out is if you share or comment on that post, we're going to enter you into a chance to win a copy of Aaron's book, Bearded Gospel Men. If you haven't checked out the work that they're doing online, please check out the link to that in the show notes as well. Here we go with my wrap-up conversation with Father Colin Parrish. Hey, Father Parrish, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I've just been reading some Flat Earther articles like I always do.
I want to talk about that in our Priest versus Layman episode coming up next. We should definitely talk about Flat Earth things. But I have a question for you before that. How's your beard doing?
I trimmed it a little bit, especially around where I have the butt part of my chin.
Yeah.
Because it gets a little goat-like right there. So I trimmed it down a little bit. And then there's less patchiness on my right cheek.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Speaking of beards, did you get a chance to sit down and listen to my interview with Aaron?
Yeah, I did.
And, let me ask you a question. While you were in seminary, mm-hmm. why didn't you write a book about beards for all the men's out there to read so that they could grow in their faith?
'Cause I wasn't a 42-year-old mature male.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I entered, I was a 24-year-old nincompoop.
What are some of the things you took away from my conversation with Aaron?
Yeah. Oh, I think else the first thing that I honed in on was, I apologize for some insider ball here, just from a man who's experienced seminary to another man who's beginning to experience seminary. I was actually kind of impressed by at least his initial descriptions of being in seminary itself, and how well disposed he was to seminary in general, at least from the tone of his voice.
What does that mean? Like, he's not upset. He's not sad. He's not dying on the vine.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Whereas it took me a good 3 years to really not feel like I was kind of choking. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a big culture shift. I mean, and that's the thing. I think that's what it is. Like, here's Aaron coming out of, I can only imagine, and this is kind of getting to the point. I can only imagine what it's like for a man who's lived a significant amount of his journey with Christ in the missionary field in Modesto or wherever, who's established his spiritual life with the Lord, who's received that spiritual life from the Lord, and who's had these very intensive and profound experiences of Christ in the mission field, but also in the church, and then entering seminary, which is a very big 180, because then you're, or it can be, like, it's a lot, it's a culture shift. It's just a culture shift, especially for a man who's kind of seasoned. And so to hear him describe things that way was nice to hear, because when I was 24 and I entered, it was super difficult.
Yeah.
So.
So you're saying he's better than you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let me ask you another question. Do you feel like there's a connection between hairiness and holiness?
You know, I don't know if the two correlate, because what do you do with Rasputin?
Well, I mean, that's a different kind of holiness. I mean, he got shot so many times. He certainly was holy at one point.
Oh, God. Dad jokes. It took me a minute to process that.
So Aaron's got this new book out. You haven't had a chance to look at it. The cool thing is it's actually across the breadth of like Christian tradition. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of Catholics, a lot of Orthodox, a lot of Protestants, all of whom are kind of bound together by this one very surface thing.
Mm-hmm.
their beards, and another very internal thing, their relationship with Jesus Christ. And I actually think it's just, it's really smart. It's really well done. There's a lot of good discussion questions. It's a really cool book. And I feel like I could never create a book. Like, I oftentimes think I'd like to write a book. And anybody who actually sits down and does that, like, just, I have immense respect for somebody who does that while they're in formation for the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that blows my mind.
Yeah, many gifts, one body, bro.
Unpack that for me.
Well, I mean, not all of us are called to be multitasking, super genius individuals.
Yeah.
Some of us are called to just do one thing really well. The other thing that was impressive for me was, one, I also just kind of was transporting myself. I again, insider ball. It's, you know, Aaron has found himself through the grace of God into a very singularly, very singular demographic, right? Which is celibate man, Catholic, in a place called seminary, which is a super tiny kind of slice of reality. And so it's really interesting to hear his journey into that. And also, like, I can understand his, I was able to really understand and affirm just from my own experience, you know, this reality of being called soon after confirmation.
Yeah.
You know, not too long after, recognizing that for whatever reason, there seems to be an inextricable bond between my relationship with God and the destiny that he wants me to fulfill.
I really loved his kind of reflection on his coming to understand his call to, like, singleness, right? Like, and it was a really beautiful, like, just articulation of the freedom he experienced. Not in, like, oh, again, I have to deal with a woman, like, but in the actual, like, unburdening of that I think people experience when they kind of discern, oh, here's who I actually am. Here's who I'm called to be. Did you have, like, a parallel experience at any point? Like when you realize, like, hey, this is what I'm called to, not just in the context of the priesthood, but specifically in the context of, like, singleness, chastity.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
No, I did. I think that, I remember early on in my formation, it was proposed to us that you could think of the men who are called to the priesthood are meant to be called from a larger group of men who are called to celibacy.
Right.
Right. So celibacy is actually supposed to be maybe more of a widespread reality within the church than is currently experienced. And you could have seen that, for example, with back in the day with monastic orders, these men living as monks, they wouldn't necessarily be priests. They were just celibate dudes living in community. That was pretty novel for me to think about it because, you know, normally from the Catholic tradition, I think, like, the normal way of going about it for a dude is just simply like, well, you know, celibacy is kind of like part of the package. And so it's a package deal. So I get priesthood and celibacy. So I guess I'm just de facto called to celibacy because I'm called to be a priest. Mm. Whereas, you know, that does a kind of disservice to the gifts of the body of Christ, right? The gifts that Christ wants to give. That celibacy is actually a gift, which is counterintuitive in most everybody's thinking in culture today. And it just doesn't seem to come naturally as a natural thought or natural consideration. The other thing about it is that it also robs the man of being able to verify what it means as a man to be celibate. Because he can be tempted with just covering that over with the work of the priest.
Hmm.
Does that make sense? So yeah. I can just cover over this other area of discernment by thinking about all the things that a priest does and da 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 da. I mean, that's a pretty crass way of putting it.
From a layperson's perspective, like, it's really easy to get caught up in the work you do and ignore your primary vocation. I've heard. I've never
ever experienced that. My
marriage because I was busy doing church stuff.
Yeah. Well, even for me, like right now, like what I'm experiencing is this reality of the need to return to the call of my celibacy, because like what Christ is asking of an individual to be celibate is that he wants a very particular relationship with you where he wants to answer even your flesh. Right. Because this relationship is so definitive and there's a privilege there, granted, that it answers. It doesn't take away the pain of it. Right. But even married couples experience the pain of it. Right. Like, it's not like I've been really dwelling, like the words have been coming from me in my prayer have been like from Psalm 16, verse 9, and even my body will rest in hope.
So are there any questions you wish I would have gone into more deeply with Aaron? I would have loved to have been able to spend more time hearing more about the community in Modesto. And I mentioned that.
Yeah, that would have been super cool because he talked about his friendships and how he said he had a phrase about it. He goes, being able to live in the heartbreak or something like that.
Yeah.
Doing ministry amongst heartbreak. And I was like, you know, you don't get to that point without suffering.
Right. Well, and I also just think like, especially within the context of a call to singleness, that requires actual legitimate friendship and intimacy with others. Like, I think, I think it's really easy for us to imagine that the person called to singleness or celibacy is awkward or incapable of relationship or somehow already isolated.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, they just are claiming a normal thing and not be aware that that actually stems.
Guys, like, let me just, for our listeners out there, let me just say it. Like, I'm just going to, can I swear? Can I cuss?
I charge you $1 every time.
The idea that somebody is called to celibacy because they're not socially adjusted or they're just a loner is bullshit. Don't like, so that's anyway, sorry.
No, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. So I think people think that. And so to hear him talk clearly about not only having this call, but having that call in some ways come out of this space of community of good and healthy friendships, of being comfortable in relationships with other people. I think there's a huge reality to that because I don't know. As soon as guys go to seminary, people make them other.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's also on the BS spectrum.
Yeah. They don't know how to be in a relationship with them. They like the sacraments for the common good, which we would, as Catholics, we would call, you know, holy orders and matrimony, so marriage. They're different, they're distinct, but they both are actually there for the building up of society. And that requires us to understand that they are part of society, stem from society, our relationships within community, and then the building back up of community. And so when we actually look at them as just separate, we look at the priest as other, it'd be like the same thing as saying, well, once my friend got married, and this happens too, I guess, I never hung out with them anymore, right? As opposed to understanding that my relationship with that person, though it may have fundamentally shifted in some ways, it's not gone. It's not bad. I don't have to not see them anymore. I just have to understand, like, they have other responsibilities now. And that changes their life, but it doesn't actually fundamentally shift my relationship with them or mean that they no longer desire to be in communion or relationship with me.
Yeah. The way that I've been kind of, I think about it is like the relationship between a signal, like a radio signal and a radio tower, you know, like, and it's the signal in doesn't change, right? It may amplify, right? Or it may weaken or whatever, but the signal itself doesn't change. But sometimes the, you know, paradoxically or counterintuitively, it's a radio tower that moves. So the radio tower has, you know, when you build a new one, you have to attune the tower to a different location to receive the signal, the same signal.
It's really good. I like that.
So, and that's what I—that's what I've been thinking, at least in my spiritual life, about how things have changed with my relationship with God. Anyway, Aaron's good job, bud. Kudos. I'm glad you're studying for the Diocese of Gallup. Yeah, I'm glad that there's a Canadian living in New Mexico. That warms my heart and makes me feel like dragons do exist.
Yeah, it warms his body.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
So. Here's what I want to say, and I talked about it a little bit during the break, but if you want to do me a favor, go ahead. If you haven't yet liked The Threshold Podcast on Facebook, which would be facebook.com/The Threshold Podcast. We're going to pop a post up on there that if you comment on or share or both, for every time one of those things you do, you will get entered into a chance to win a copy of The Bearded Gospel Men Epic Quest for Manliness and Godliness book. I've got three copies of it to give away, which I am really, really excited to get out to some of our listeners. So please check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/The Threshold Podcast, and share the post that we have there with Bearded Gospel Men, Aaron Alford. Aaron, thank you so much for what you're doing. Until next time, guys, get out there, F and F ability, and talk about what really matters.